Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Tonight's guest will be Beth Houston, talking about her blackjack superstar father, Ken Houston. Houston's Million Dollar Blackjack book was a major influence on the gambling careers of both Shaq and myself. We'll be talking to Beth in about 15 minutes. Last week, the entire country was talking about the Mega Millions lottery. I purchased my usual number of lottery tickets, which of course is zero. Michael, why don't you explain how good or bad EV-wise buying lottery tickets was last week?
Yes, you sure missed a lot of excitement while you were on your cruise. I had all kinds of people in the news media trying to contact me for interviews about that, everyone from the CBS Evening News with Scott Pelley right down to the Ventura County Star. And, you know, I got a lot of the same questions over and over. One that I'm surprised had to even be asked was, does buying more tickets improve your odds? And lest anyone misunderstand, every single ticket has the exact same chance of winning. It doesn't matter what numbers were picked or how big the jackpot is or what numbers were picked in the past. They all had about a 1 in 176 million chance of winning. However, if you buy more tickets, then your chances increase in proportion to the number of tickets that you buy. Obviously, but it was amazing how often I was asked that.
So it doesn't affect the odds.
Well, a lot of people ask, if I buy 10 tickets, are my chances of winning 10 times better? And yes, of course they are. But of course you're spending 10 times as much money, so it's still the same value on a percentage basis no matter how many you buy.
Correct.
Another question I got a lot was that was discussed on my website. The reporters, I don't think, were clever enough to think of this question, is what is the best jackpot size to play the Mega Millions? And what I did was I graphed the jackpot size by the number of tickets sold, and it was basically an exponential relationship. And you might think, well, the bigger the jackpot, the better. But no, at a certain point, the media hype gets so big that it induces so much extra competition that due to jackpot sharing, your value actually starts to decrease. And I calculate that the best jackpot point to buy tickets is $340 million. So in this last drawing, the jackpot got so big that the odds actually got kind of bad.
Wait. They stayed kind of bad. They never got good.
Yes, they never get good with the Mega Millions, but it actually started to get worse beyond the 340 million point because so many people played it. I show that 651.9 million people bought tickets, and when you consider that the odds are about 1 in 176 million, the expected number of winners was 3.7. So that's, you're sharing your jackpot with assuming you're one of them, 2.7 other people. So it's getting cut 3.7 ways.
The And how bad were they? If you had bought in at that 340, if you somehow knew that no more were going to be bought, how bad was the Mega Millions percentage-wise?
Well, I don't have the optimal return in front of me for a $340 million jackpot.
Yeah.
But for the $640 million that we just had, I calculate that after taxes and after the annuity, not even considering state taxes, the expected return was about 56%. In other words, a house advantage of 44%.
Huge.
Which is a terrible bet. And I still cannot put my mind in the mindset of everyone else who was buying their, who was playing this thing, let alone standing hours in line to buy tickets. I can only attribute it to a herd hysteria over this.
Well, and I actually think the odds are worse than that, simply because the value of money is not linear. Assume one of our listeners has a bankroll of 100,000, and I don't know who that listener is, but assume we have one. And if you gave him $50 million and said, this is yours now, spend it as you want, he would be ecstatic, make his plans and do whatever he did. If you gave him $100 million, he'd be equally ecstatic. He wouldn't be twice as ecstatic. It's like, for normal people, $50 million is all the money in the world. $100 million isn't twice as good. Yeah, it's a little bit better. You write slightly bigger checks to the charities, but it isn't twice as good. And so it's likely much worse than the 56% that you calculated.
Absolutely. I studied economics in college, and a lot of my professors said that happiness is a function of the log of the wealth that you have. And so when you look at it in terms of the utility of money, it gets much worse than 56%.
All right. And we won't get into it, whose log is bigger than whose. All right. Let's change subjects a little bit. Last week's show was, our guest was Michael Gaughan. He's the owner of the South Point. We taped the show about 3 weeks earlier because Gaughan was having, he has evening commitments and can't do the show live. And Shirley and I were cruising the Caribbean last week, so we couldn't do the show live either. Now, Shaq was willing and able to host the show without me, and perhaps that will happen someday, but this time it wasn't necessary. There was a question we wanted to ask Michael Gaughan, but he asked us not to ask him this because his people had not yet decided how to handle it. Now they have. Now we can talk about it. Leap day, February 29th. The mailers said there would be 2x points all day long. These mailers were prepared in early January, and by early February, Gaughan had forgotten that he had set February 29th as 2x point days. He decided to make 3x point days from noon to 9 p.m. Now, as he was designing this promotion, his assumption was the rest of the day would be single points because he had forgot that he had written it was already going to be double points. Now, on this show, I'm doing commercials, and I write my own commercials. Since I had the mailer, I was saying it's double points for the rest of the day and triple points during those 9 hours. When player got there, a lot of people got there 1, 2, or 3 in the morning and discovered they were only getting single points, and that wasn't likely to change. And so some continued to play, and some didn't. And so it turns out that quite a few people are unhappy with it. They went there expecting double points, and they were only getting single points. Now, for whatever reason, computer-wise, there was no way to fix this globally. It would seem like you could just write a quickie computer program and just add the money in and everything would be fine. But according to Gaughan, they can't do that with their system. However, they can manually do it. It does take some time. So if you played between midnight and noon on leap day, you need to, and you want to get those points doubled, you need to contact Clift Page, P-A-I-G-E. He's the slot director there, either in person, telephone, or email. The email is pagec, P-A-I-G-E-C, at southpointcasino.com. Pagec at southpointcasino.com. the point balance will be manually adjusted. For some reason, I do not understand the points after 9 p.m. and before midnight cannot be doubled. And so I'm not sure why, but that's the way it is. So, Michael, do you have any comment on this?
Well, I would, of course, prefer to see them double everyone's points automatically. But as you said, their computer cannot do this automatically and requires a manual recalculation for every person individually, which would be prohibitive in terms of time. So I applaud them for at least throwing it out there to the public that if you are affected by this, come and ask for your points, and we will double them. So it's better than nothing.
Yeah, we might find out if we have any listeners on the radio show. If nobody calls in, that would be bad news for us. So. Now, they're having an interesting promotion at the Silverton. It's not one I'm recommending, but it is one that I thought I wanted to talk about. It's a good news, bad news promotion. They're holding drawings for Audis, $30,000 cars, every Saturday evening in April, 7 p.m., but you don't need to be there to win. They're going to draw in at 7. As long as you're there before 9, you can collect your prize, and there's $5 prizes as well. Now, that's the good news. So somebody who wanted to participate in, say, the Palms 7 o'clock drawing on Saturday and the Silverton drawing, that would be great. Now it's possible. So that sounds great, except there's three different bits of bad news with this. First of all, you only can get 50 tickets maximum per day, which is you're playing $2,500 coin in. That means each player maxes out at 350 tickets per week. But everyone who comes in and asks at the booth gets 5 free tickets. So no matter how much you play, you'll always be a big underdog to win the drawing. Now, I call this bad news because on normal card drawings, I'm willing and able to play a lot extra to boost my chances to win. But this one, that doesn't work. So for low rollers, I suppose this is a better kind of a drawing. You don't have a great chance, but you have a better chance than if I was going to play a lot. The second bit of bad news is that one of the ways to enter the drawing is to play 1 point anytime Saturday prior to 7 p.m. It may be after 12 noon and before 7. This means a fairly high percentage of the tickets in the drum are from players who have no intention of being at the drawing. They don't know about the drawing or aren't planning to be around, but they're playing on Saturday for whatever reason. Even where the drawings where you specifically have to swipe to enter, you frequently have no-shows. For drawing where you don't have to specifically swipe, there will be a lot of no-shows. And the third bit of bad news is if nobody shows up by 9 p.m. to collect the car, the casino doesn't award the prize to anybody else. So on a must-be-there-to-win drawings, they continue to draw names until they have a winner. But this drawing, they don't. So the casino can advertise giving away 4 cars, but they will most likely end up giving less than that, possibly even 0. Do you have any comment about this, Shaq?
Yeah, I also dislike promotions where you don't have to be present to win. That's the status of video poker these days. It's usually it does take some kind of promotion to get you through the door and play what would normally be a negative game. So if I'm playing video poker, there's a good chance it is some promotion that's drawing me in which case I'm going to be present there to win. And I like it when they call people and they don't claim their prize, so they call somebody else, as well as everyone else who is there that took the trouble to show up. So, and I also think that it's a little bit misleading to say that you're giving away 4 cars when there's a good chance that you won't be giving away all 4, but I wouldn't go so far as to say that's false advertising. And this reminds me of a promotion we talked about before where at the Coast Casinos that practically everyone was involved in and hardly anyone knew about it. So I think that they gave away a very small percentage of the prize money that was actually up for grabs.
Well, I don't know if it was a small percentage of the $1 million that Gold Coast was claiming to give away. I heard they did give away $7,000.
7,000 out of how much?
1 million.
So I would call that a small percentage.
Yes. All right. So, Shaq, why don't you tell us who Beth Houston is and why she's on the show tonight.
Okay. Ken Houston, Beth Ann Houston's father, is one of the best and most influential blackjack players of all time. Houston's three books on blackjack introduced many to the game, including both of us. He was among the first to practice and write about team play. His books are not just an enjoyable read about Ken's exciting life as a professional blackjack player, but also the basics on how to play the game. However, blackjack was just one chapter in the exciting life of Ken Houston. He also wrote about computers and video games. After his blackjack days, Ken worked as a consultant to a casino in South Africa and then as a financial consultant in Kuwait shortly before the Iraqi invasion. In 1987, Ken died in Paris at the young age of 52, survived by three children, one of whom, Beth Ann Houston, is with us today to talk about her father. We're grateful to have Beth help us out with to keep the memory of her father alive. So, Beth, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
Well, thanks again. It's great to have you. So while preparing for this interview, I was surprised to learn that your father is half Japanese. In fact, his father was taken to a internment camp after Pearl Harbor. So I hope it won't offend anybody if I say that the Japanese are normally a conformist people, which is exactly the opposite of how I would describe your father. So can you tell me more about the effect of your father's Japanese heritage had on his life?
Well, yes, his father was full Japanese, and then mom was Austrian, so it was quite a blend. But, yeah, he had a very hard time when he was young, when he was in grade school, which would be the 40s. He was ostracized, taunted and teased, wanted to rub the Japanese off of him. He was the oldest of three children, so he felt it the most. But this experience, it really framed his outlook on life, which was, you know, I'll show them. I'll overcome this. I will get even, especially women. He just fought his whole life to prove himself. And after, I'd say, maybe 20 years, he realized that, you know, changing his name, and which really hurt his parents, he was, again, proud of his heritage. But for a while there, it did quite a number on him and framed his whole life.
Now, he's rumored to have also had surgery on his eyes to hide his Japanese heritage. Is that true? And do you know why he did this?
Well, again, trying not to look a certain way or behave a certain way. I can almost 98% confirm that, because there isn't really there's not really a full answer in my family from my mom or his sisters, who are still alive, because that question is it's always just invaded. Nobody wants to talk about it, but I'm pretty sure that he did.
Okay. So before your father got mixed up in blackjack, he graduated from Yale and Harvard from an early age. Then he became a successful young executive at the Pacific Stock Exchange, and at this time I understand he led a very conservative family life, excelling at one thing after another. However, living in San Francisco in the 1970s was full of temptation, which your father evidently succumbed to.
Yeah.
So you mentioned this to me, that there was almost an overnight change in him. Can you tell us more about the pre-blackjack days and living in San Francisco?
Right. Well, we lived in Marin County up on top of a hill with this beautiful view. I mean, it was really the American dream there for a while. He would take the ferry across the bay to San Francisco to work at the Pacific Coast Stock Exchange, and it really was the American dream. However, yes, he got mixed up in all the 70s and, geez, all the counterculture going on right in San Francisco, and he had a whole world out there that was different from the family life, and once he got a taste of it and getting married right away after college, and then, of course, realizing that he can play blackjack and figure out a system for blackjack, that just took him away. Boom.
So I'm assuming by counterculture, you mean sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Goodness gracious, yes. I mean, he's out there with Jefferson Airplane and Grateful Dead and Bill Graham. I mean, and I was too young to even know what was going on in San Francisco.
I heard of Billy Graham. I didn't think he was. He belonged to that set.
Well, I mean, just Winterland and, you know, the promoter. But so, yeah, he got caught up in that, all right.
So, Al Francesco introduced him to blackjack. He was on the show a while ago.
Right.
Now, Al told us that he invented the big player strategy and was somewhat surprised and disappointed that your father wrote about it. Is this the way it is translated in your family, or is this just the way it's Al Francesco's memory?
Well, I think he was, you know, he was introduced in that way to the game of blackjack. And when my father wrote about their whole system, their whole stories in the book, The Big Player, yes, he pissed off some people because it was like he gave away the secrets. However, though, when my dad wrote The Big Player, it was pretty much done. I mean, the casinos, the eye in the sky, you really couldn't even card count anymore. So I will just say, I won't confirm it, but that's just my take on it. And I really, you know, my dad, Ken Houston, developed his own system really based on his hero was Revere and Thorpe. And his whole system is based on Revere's. As far as I've learned and heard and read.
Okay, yeah. Most card counters like me just use a simple plus-minus system. Mm-hmm. But your father used a very advanced strategy, which I think was called the advanced
point count.
Houston count or something
Houston
like that.
Houston advanced point count.
Yes, and I recall on the 60 Minutes piece on him, he was doing a side count of aces with his feet, which I found to be too distracting for me.
Right.
So I started out using one of your father's simpler counts where it treated the 3 through the 7 as a small card as opposed to the 2 through 6. My question is, I know that Revere and Braun were here, like mentors to him, but did he create the blackjack strategies in his books himself, or did he get, say, Julian Braun to help with that?
No. His whole system was really based on his hero. Once again, I said that before, but it was Revere. Lawrence Revere was his hero. He developed his own, the Houston advanced point count, based on Revere's work. It was a slight variation, but he really came up with the system based on that whole count on his. And he also loved Stanford Wong and then Thorpe. Thorpe was his favorite. And he based pretty much everything he did was based on those two, Revere and Thorpe.
And those were the big names at that time.
Along with Arnold Snyder.
Yeah, and he really was dedicated to Wong also. And I think he actually met the two of them, Revere and Thorpe, at some point. Before Revere died.
Uh-huh.
So your father was kind of media savvy. He knew Harry Reasoner for 60 Minutes. He was on Sports Illustrated. So when that was going on, were you the really cool kid in school whose dad was on the picture of Sports Illustrated, or were you kind of
absolutely
hiding?
No, absolutely not. My mom would not expose us to this. I knew nothing of this whole thing till I was 19 or 20. My dad took me to Las Vegas, and he kind of confessed. But no, I was way too young. Nobody really knew anything.
So you didn't grow up with the last name of Houston?
My name was changed from the Japanese name Yusui when I was about 2 years old. But no, I grew up as a Houston, and my mom shielded us from all of that. We did not see the newspapers because he was in the media all the time. But when 60 Minutes came out and Harry Reasoner interviewed him, I was older, and so my dad was very proud of that. So he made sure we all watched him on that. But yes, he was friends with Harry Reasoner, and then the producer, Drew Phillips. They hung out.
Okay, we touched on team play before, and when your father started playing blackjack, did he get right into the team play, or did he play on his own first?
No.
And I know that eventually he wore out his welcome and started using disguises.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, he could play on his own, and then once they figured him out, he used disguises. It worked a little bit, but they could tell it was Ken Houston from the way he placed his chips. His hands just were the giveaway. But no, the team play came in much later when he just couldn't play anymore on his own.
Okay.
So was that the primary reason he gave up blackjack, is that he couldn't get a good game?
Well, he gave up blackjack because after he sued the casinos, the Nevada Gaming Commission, which ruled in the precedent case that card counting is legal, but the casinos changed the rules. So they are shuffling the decks at any time, shuffle track and all that. So he couldn't play anymore. So he just couldn't. I mean, the disguises didn't work. He got beat up and kicked out of these places. So then he started writing his books. He wrote like 12 books about blackjack and video games.
Yeah, these days, players, if any of that happens to them, they get lawyers, apparently. So apparently this was before Bob Nersessian.
Oh, yeah. My dad was good friend. He knew Benny Binion. He was, they hit it off.
Well, that's good. Benny would have beaten him up.
Yeah. Benny would say.
Benny killed people.
You can play anytime you want, but you can only play with a quarter, a green chip.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So he had flat bet him.
Yeah, my father knew all the owners and the general managers. He knew Steve Wynn, but the pit bosses didn't really like him, I found out, so he didn't really hang out with them.
Okay, so you mentioned that your mother tried to shield you from your father's blackjack career, but I understand that things that they were going through tough time in their marriage, and they eventually got a divorce. And my question is after your father got out of blackjack, did he try to make up for maybe being a absent father and husband later in life?
Well, it was a really ugly divorce, and yes, he did. When we were old enough and meeting around 20, that age, he started appearing more in our life and taking us to his TV appearances and out to dinner, and it was all when Mastering Pac-Man, his bestseller book, came out on the game of Pac-Man in the, I guess, middle 80s, I think, but that's when we started reconnecting with him. He took us to Disneyland and all that, but when we were younger and all this other stuff was going on, no, we didn't really connect too much with him.
Did he personally take you to any arcades and show you how to beat Pac-Man, or were you already too old by that time?
No, he did. When he was on Jane Pauley, the morning show, demonstrating how you play Pac-Man for hours with one quarter, he took us to that show. He tried to teach us the patterns and the mathematical programs within Pac-Man. He bought us the video game, of course. So, yeah, he tried to teach us. He also taught me the basic strategy. And actually, my sister was the one who learned how to count down the deck of cards. He could count down a deck of cards in about 10 seconds, they say.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty fast.
Did you ever go gambling with him?
I did. I wasn't even 21 yet.
Teacher, teacher.
Yeah, well, that's the time where you had the fake IDs. They were easy to get. But I was 20. We went to Caesars. He met me there, and we played blackjack. He didn't play. He watched me, and I didn't count the cards. I was doing basic strategy, and I broke even. And everyone just kept coming up to him, and it seemed like he knew everyone. And then he'd sit in the lobby and play the piano, and it's a pretty fond memory that I have of that.
Yeah, I can vouch that when I turned 21 in 1986, Vegas was very liberal about carding, and nobody ever carded me, and I looked like I was 17 when I was 21.
You still look like you're 17, Michael. You're just blessed with good genes.
Oh, I wish, but thank you for saying so.
No, I got kicked out of Circus Circus when I was 19. I shouldn't have ever been in there in the first place. But they didn't keep me out of Caesars.
Probably Circus Circus had more of a problem with underage people than
yeah.
But as I mentioned in the introduction, or as was mentioned before, you talked about your father getting beat up a few times by the casinos. And despite that happening, I know he went on to consult for a casino in South Africa. So did these beatings sour him on casinos to the point where he just really hated them and wanted to take as much money of theirs as he could? Or did he look at it on a case-by-case basis where he was, as I believe you said, that he was friendly with Benny Binion? And so, you know, did he have an adversarial relationship with the casinos, or was it more aimed to him?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, it was very strange. Resorts ended up, you know, one of the casinos he sued, they ended up having him appear in their commercials. So he was never, no, I don't think that he had any bad taste in his mouth from all this, because when he went to the South Africa Sun City, it was a consulting job. He wasn't trying to beat the casinos or get them back, per se. But no, I just I think that he wanted to continue in blackjack somehow. And after that consulting job, and he pretty much figured out immediately why the casinos lost money. He figured out in about a day it was internal stealing within some of the employees. That was his last consulting job having to do anything with blackjack and casinos.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to imply he was trying to take money from this casino in South Africa.
Right.
But one area where there's a lot of discussion and disagreement in advantage play is why do it in the first place. And some people do it out of just a loathing of casinos. Others simply do it for the money, and some do it because they just enjoy the challenge. So that's why I was asking about what his motive was.
Yeah, enjoying the challenge and be able to use his brain. He could figure something out, then go for it.
Okay.
Now, shortly before he passed, he spent a year or so in Kuwait. Apparently he was doing some kind of consulting, but this is a pretty restrictive Arab country. And for your father had some habits like gambling, drinking, drugs, women, whatever, which are frowned upon rather severely in a country like Kuwait. So why would he pick such a place to go to? That seems like the last place in the world.
Okay, well, his very good friend, his headhunter, who's been with finding these consultant jobs for him, he mentioned this job in Kuwait. Of course, my father was saying, where's Kuwait? And he was very curious because it paid a lot of money, it was tax-free money, and it was setting up a computer profile system for the finance department in Kuwait. It was just a huge job in Kuwait. So he did write a book about this because, yes, he has a penchant for wine, women, and song. Why would he want to go to this country? But he was drawn to the job and the challenge, of which he ended up doing this in about 11 months. But, yeah, he had a really hard time with the strict rules. Oh, I mean, at the time, you couldn't even dance. And there was cameras in the elevators, and you couldn't date. You couldn't have women in your room unless you were married. But the reason he took that job was, of course, it was a major, major kind of a stepping stone for him, because it didn't have anything to do with blackjack. It was computers, because after blackjack he got into computers.
And he was always a musician from a very young age, right? And do you think that maybe he I doubt there was a law against playing music in Kuwait, so do you mm-hmm. think maybe he got back into that?
Yes, in Kuwait he actually found the underground, so he got to be in theater. They put on shows, and mm-hmm. he just sit there. He lived at the Kuwait Hilton, and the big piano in the lobby, he'd play, and then they'd kick him out. But he was able to find that underground because people did have fun in Kuwait. Secret, though. So he was able to still play his music and play his bass. And, you know, he couldn't wait to get out of there, though. He really couldn't. It was getting the political unrest there. I mean, there was a war like 60 miles away from him, Basra, and, you know, they started bombing, and he knew that he would have to leave soon. So he left, what, 87, 86, and then Kuwait was invaded, you know, 90, 91, I believe.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, he got out just in time.
So we have about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
Now, you run the website Houston.com.
Yes.
What's that all about?
Well, I designed that website because there were so many rumors about my father out there. You know, if you Google Ken Houston, there's at least 300,000 sites, and a lot of it was just a bunch of baloney. Oh, he was a drug addict and this and that. And I thought, you know what, first of all, I'm going to set the story straight. So I have the whole story on there. And plus, people are still calling and asking me for his books and his teaching materials, his account. And so I also have merchandise on there, his memorabilia. And it's done quite well. I mean, there really is, you know, we're keeping his name alive. He's in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. And just by having that website out there, you know, I get a lot of people who will call or email me and say, oh, I knew your dad. And those are my favorite ones. I knew your dad in 1980. You know, and they'll tell me stories of him.
Speaking of keeping your father's memory alive, I hear that there's been interest off and on in doing a movie about his life based on his book, The Big Player. Do you know how hot or cold that project is?
He was very excited about this project his whole life. Since about the 70s, we had some people very interested, and they wrote a screenplay and blah, 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 and they tried to make it happen. It never did. So one of my goals, really, the things that he left unfinished, like he wrote the book American in Kuwait but didn't finish it, and so I did through all his notes. And his screenplay is based on The Big Player, and it only goes to the 80s, so I kind of filled in the blanks, and I think that the story would be fantastic.
Would it be similar to the movie 21, only set 20 years earlier?
Goodness. Well, nothing against those guys, because I really like them and everything. But no, it would not be similar to 21. A lot of people called me when that movie came out,
mm-hmm.
and they thought it was about my dad, Ken Houston. And I just had to say, no, they did the movie first before I did. But no, it would be more of a personal, it wouldn't be just focused on Blackjack. It would kind of be like the whole story. This is a very interesting story, and it's kind of a mystery of how he died, too, which I don't want to get too much into.
We very much appreciate you taking the time. Ken Houston is in our business, one of the stars, and you've helped bring him back to life. Many of our listeners are too young to have known him, but he still has a very famous name, and we're glad we know him better. Thank you very much, Beth.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, guys. You guys have a great night out there.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
So, Michael, what did we learn tonight?
Well, that was, I learned a lot about her father. The part about being half Japanese and trying to hide from it, but then seems like later on he made peace with that. I found very interesting, and did not know he was friends with Lawrence Revere, and just about that whole interview I found very interesting, and very happy to bring back the memory of a great blackjack player.
Yeah, I've always been asked if his book, Million Dollar Blackjack, if I was trying to copy that when I wrote Million Dollar Video Poker, and it just happened to be that way. I wish my book had a quarter of the success that his did. Good. What's been happening on your websites, Michael?
Let's see. On Wizard of Macau, I recently added a review of the Four Seasons Casino in Macau, which is, I think, the most elegant casino there. And Wizard of Vegas has pretty much stayed the same. And on Wizard of Odds, I added something that you would be very familiar with, a video poker hand calculator where you put in any game and any five cards, and it will tell you the correct play and what the expected value of that play would be.
So this is nothing that Video Poker for Winners doesn't do, but your site gives it to it for free.
Yes.
And Video Poker for Winners, I would like you to buy several copies of that.
And it's not that I'm trying to take away your business, but I just felt that this, as a gambling writer, it was just a useful application for my readers, but I highly recommend everyone go out there and buy Video Poker for Winners. It does a lot more than my website does.
And if your mail is anything like mine, they want that calculator on an iPad or iPod or Droid or something like that. So there's a need for that.
And that's another thing that I'm working on.
Good. All right. We'll give you till next week. Is that okay? Maybe longer.
I take longer than that.
All right. The South Point has more than 100. More than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else. Double Points is Easter Sunday, April 8th. After the fact, I kind of thought that last Sunday would be a good point for Double Points because it was really two holidays, both Palm Sunday and April Fool's Day, which is the holy and the secular all mixed together, but somehow didn't think of that in time, so it didn't happen. They have free slot tournaments on Thursday, which is for all sexy seniors 50 years and older. You get one free entry, and you can earn up to two additional entries at a rate of 250 points apiece. You keep the points. A total of 30 winners share $5,200, with the winner giving $1,500. At the Palms, the Play, Earn, and Win promotion for the first part of the month gives you chance, you let you earn Kindle Fires, Apple gift cards, and lesser gifts such as binoculars, tarps, and fly swatters. I never can have too many fly swatters. This continues through Friday the 13th. Beginning Monday the 16th, the gifts change to, among other things, Visa gift cards. They have drawings Friday and Saturday nights in April. This is Apple and Cash. So 10 winners. There's iMacs, there's MacBook Airs, there's iPads, there's iPod Touches and iPod Shuffles. In addition to those prizes, you get cash prizes, where the $3,000 is paired up with the iMac, and down to $150 or $100, which are paired with the iPod Shuffle. You can win once a night, but you can win both Friday and Saturday. And after the Saturday night's drawing, the virtual tickets they go to Never Neverland. Players must be there to win. All right. Next week, Don Schlesinger is going to be our guest. Who is he, Michael?
Don Schlesinger is the author of Blackjack Attack. He's another longtime blackjack player and writer. He's also has a thing or two to say about other games. Don does not do interviews very often, so I'm happy to have him on the show and see what he has to say. Don also has been a friend of mine through the years and has helped proofread a lot of the stuff on my site. So I look forward to hearing what he has to say.
Good. Some of the questions tonight for Beth were submitted by Richard Munchkin, who is still involved in the background of the show, even though he no longer commutes from California to do it. So thank you very much, Munch. And if you'd like to submit a question, send it to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. And also let us know that if we use the question, do you want your name mentioned? Some people might want to submit a question but do it anonymously. So we welcome you to participate in the questions. Now, at the end of the Michael Gaughan show, we had less than a minute to go, and Shaq volunteered to tell a joke. Now, I was out of things to say, so I told him to go for it. I thought the joke was cute. And right after the show ended, Michael Gaughan said the joke was terrible off the air, although he said it in a tone of voice that was pretty friendly. Shaq said that he had earned $500 in a contest for telling that joke. So, Mike, please quickly recap the joke and then tell us about the contest. I'm curious.
Okay, I'd be happy to. Here is the joke again. A man walks into a bar looking to have a game of poker, and there's usually a game going on in the back corner. So he walks over to the back corner and sees the usual faces there, but there's also a dog at the table.
Uh-huh.
And he found this very interesting. I didn't even know they allowed dogs in the bar, he thought. And but then he goes closer and he sees the dog is actually playing. He's got chips in front of him and he's raising, he's folding, he's handling the cards, he's doing everything all the people at the player are doing. And nobody is treating him any differently. It's as if it happens every day. And he just stands from afar just watching this in amazement. And after about 10 minutes, he cannot hold his tongue any longer. And he quietly says to a player at the opposite end of the table from the dog, "You know, I have seen a thing or two in my life, but this is the most incredible thing I have ever seen. That must be the smartest dog in the whole world." And the player says, "Shh, he's not so smart. Every time he gets a good hand, he wags his tail."
A rim shot. That was really good. All right. So now you won $500 for that one.
Yes, this is one of my favorite jokes, and one time when I used to play a lot of internet casinos for the bonuses, this uh-huh. was my main angle in the early zeros decade, Casino on Net was having a joke contest, and so I submitted this joke, and lo and behold, I won, and so they added $500 to my account, no strings attached, so I think that's the most I've ever won in a contest that I didn't have to actually invest money in.
Huh.
I will always be thankful to that joke and continue telling it in its honor.
Interesting. I guess earning $500, I have a we used to play at the Mirage. They would have monthly giveaways. And you'd play all weekend and earn tickets, and they'd give away cash at the end. And one month, instead of having entertainment, they had karaoke, so all the players could go up and volunteer to sing. And if you they're going to have 20 people sing, and each get $250. And so Shirley goes, she wanted to win, so she went and stuffed the ballot box, putting her name in there 8 times and my name in there 4 times. And she was the first one called.
Mm-hmm.
And she was awful. Now, I love Shirley dearly, but she can't sing worth beans.
What song did she sing?
It was Jump, which she couldn't think of a song. She hadn't heard it in a while. She didn't realize it was a 8-minute song and didn't really remember the lyrics, and it was really awful. And but at the end, she paid $250, and so she came back to the table and she says, "I know I sucked, but I got my $250 and I'm happy." So, okay. So they decided at this point, this was so bad that they were only going to have half as many singers and give $500 each. So then they called me and I went up there and sang a song. It was better than Shirley, although I was suggested that I should stick to dancing and not singing. And so I sang a song, and got $500. So I'm a professional singer. Good. So be it.
What song did you sing?
Lost and Found in a Border Town. It's a Brooks and Dunn song. It was actually one of the few Brooks and Dunn songs that the lead was sung by Kix Brooks. For if you're not into country and western, Brooks and Dunn was the top duo for more than a decade. Now they have gone their own ways. But anyway, that was that.
Well, congratulations. And by the way, you do not want to be anywhere near the place if I'm singing karaoke. I think people would pay for me to stop singing.
Yeah, I I cringe when I go by karaoke bars. There's some good ones, but not. Now, we had an email about South Point. You got an email, Michael. What was that all about?
Yeah, somebody asked about this claim of the South Point that they have 10,000 video poker games that pay over 99%. And somebody on my Wizard of Vegas site challenged this, saying that on gaming's website, where they list the number of slots in every casino, they don't even have 10,000 total slots, let alone video poker. So where does this 10,000 figure come from, and how do they substantiate that claim?
Okay. Did you want to answer that, or did you want to throw it to me?
I would like to throw it to you.
Okay. It is, when in terms of if they have 3,000 machines, that they have a lot more than 3,000 games. There are multi-denom, multi-game machines. So you might have a game with a machine with 12 games on it for each of four different denominations. Quarters,
so that would count as 48 games.
Yeah. And now, and however many of them were on there. Now, on some machines, it's like all of the deuces wild on all the pay schedules or all the denominations would be NSU. Other games, all of them would be less than that. All the bonus poker would be. So you could have machines where they have 20, 30, 40 different games over 99% all on one machine. Now, I have not gone through the casino to count the game denomination combinations. That would be more time consuming for very little reward. So I'm not really interested in doing that. So the number comes from the South Point themselves, and I trust them on it.
Okay. Not to say that I don't trust them, but I think a statistic I would be interested in is what percentage of their video poker is over 99%.
Okay. Did you want to ask them, or did you want to go in and run a survey?
I don't think I want to know that badly to run it in and do a survey, but
Guess is it's higher than anywhere else. That would be my guess.
Yes, and I used to play there a little bit, and I thought that you could pick any machine at random and see some very liberal pay tables. So I'm sure they would have an impressive statistic there as well. And as we mentioned on a previous show, we're hoping to do a tour of the surveillance room there, and maybe
yes,
we can bring this up at that time.
Good. We got about a minute left. We spent on the Shirley and I were in the Caribbean last week on the Epic, and generally stayed out of the casino, except there was one advantage play. They have a promotion where if you pay $250, you can use $250 towards any future NCL cruise in the next 4 years, plus you get $100 to spend immediately. And since we go on enough of these because we're given them by Harrah's, that was a good investment. Now, on this $100 they give you immediately, if you play it through once in the casino, they will give you $125 of slot dollars. So even though their games are 7-5 jacks or better, it is still better than 80% game. So that was our play. We got 3 seconds left. Everybody hit lots of royal flushes. Good night.
Night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel Casino and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com, and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.